Hello, hello, hello.
What up?
Welcome to The Plot Strikes Back. Bum, bum, bum. We are here today to talk about Guy Ritchie's newest movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Oh, wow.
Which is considered a spy action comedy film and based on a true story, actually.
Yes, which is awesome, too.
Yes, it is based off of Operation Postmaster that was apparently sanctioned by the great Winston Churchill himself from some files that were cleared
what,
in 2016.
Yeah.
So, which is pretty wild considering this happened in January 14th, 1942 is what the date says of Operation Postmaster. So,
yeah, it's pretty wild.
Over 80 years later, here we are.
Well, my dad has a book that he read that's about this, about that like secret group that Churchill formed.
Yeah, so
I never read it, but I think it puts more of a focus on the women that were a part of it on like some kind of different level, but I don't think it mentions anything about any specific missions because I don't know if that book was published before 2016 or not. You know what I mean? Be interesting to look at.
Yeah, it's possible. It's based on the book's called Churchill's Secret Warriors, The Explosive True Story of the Special Forces Desperados of World War II by Damian Lewis. Not the actor Damian Lewis, but the British author and filmmaker. Yeah, I don't know when that book was actually published, but assuming it was published beforehand.
I think so, too.
And then, obviously, I wonder if that's sort of where Guy Ritchie got the idea of, you know, hey, you know what? Now that this information is public or, you know, he has access to it now, he can sort of take that idea and build something upon it. But
yeah, something awesome from it.
Yeah. And obviously, Guy Ritchie has done a lot of great movies. And, you know, prior to this, the only thing that we've covered so far is The Gentleman, if you want to check that out.
Awesome movie.
We did last year. And speaking of that, he actually did the Gentleman TV series, which was amazing. And I know you haven't watched it yet, but definitely recommend watching that.
It's on the list.
It is definitely a good show.
Right?
Yep, on Netflix. Theo James is amazing in that show. Might be the best thing I think he's ever done.
Really?
Yeah, hands down. Hands down.
Huh.
Yeah. And this isn't the first time that Henry Cavill has worked with Guy Ritchie. He did The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
That is a great movie.
Yeah. And he obviously has another movie coming out called In the Gray, which will have Henry Cavill and Jake Gyllenhaal and Isaac Gonzalez. Isaac Gonzalez was just in this movie that we're talking about here. And honestly, this movie had a pretty great cast, top to bottom, I think.
Kind of loaded.
Yeah, definitely loaded, you know. And I didn't know that he was in this until I saw him on screen. I think you and I both looked at each other.
Oh, yeah.
Was the one and only
Hugo Stieglitz.
Of course, I've heard of Hugo Stieglitz. From Inglourious Basterds, Tilman Schweiger, but he plays Heinrich Luhr. And if you haven't seen this movie yet, obviously there will be spoilers. But
yeah,
if you're looking for, you know, some sort of podcast episode that you want to listen to and see if it is worth seeing, I'm just going to say from the start, it is definitely worth seeing.
100%.
We'll address something from the start here. It is exactly 120 minutes for runtime, so it is exactly a 2-hour movie.
And it's a quick 2 hours, mind you. It's a very quick 2 hours.
Yeah, there's really no pacing issues as far as I'm concerned, and it moves pretty quick. There's, you know, one or two spots that have a fair bit of dialogue, but it's important, and the dialogue that is being, you know, literally said is meaningful, because you've got someone who's trying to win over a commanding Nazi officer.
You know, not even that too, like even in those moments where it's just not the action or not the comedy going on, like you said, you have that dialogue that is explaining literally everything, so there are no plot holes. But also the music kind of adds to that sense of like keeping it moving along, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think the score, I think the music was good in this film. Music was based by Christopher Benstead. He's a British film composer, arranger, and Academy Award winning re-recording mixer, in case you were
wondering.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm not too familiar with any other sort of scores he's done off the top of my head, but I enjoyed his composition for this film. You know, I think one of the other interesting parts about this runtime is you see it all, you know, come together, you know, right from the beginning, and there's like a brief timeline that shows, you know, there's 18 days until they land on this island, and before that there's a 25 day like setup to say here's how everything kind of comes together. And you know, the character that Henry Cavill plays from real life is named Gus March Phillips, or I think they call him like Major Phillips.
Yep,
because he's a rank, and he doesn't have a good track record. I think pretty much, you know, none of them are sort of.
It's like a Suicide Squad.
Yeah, it's like they're the, you know, they're not the Avengers. They're the opposite of the Avengers. Like,
yep.
You know, they're the anti-heroes essentially. Like, you know, and it's so, what I find so interesting too, you know, just based on real life is, you know, at the state of the war where, and I like that they address this because there is a bit of history there. And obviously this is, you know, fiction. So I haven't tried to see what those files exactly state,
yeah.
But I'm assuming that part of it is going to be somewhat close enough. And then obviously things need to be, you know, taken and accounted for because it's, you know, number one, we have no idea what sort of dialogue was actually said.
Oh yeah.
You know, so that's the one thing that is being completely made up from scratch. And, you know, like anything, you kind of see like, well, this is how it started. This is where it started. This is how and where it ends. So Guy Ritchie basically has to fill in the blanks. It's like, I've got two slices of bread. I've got to add everything in between it and make sure it's a nice juicy sandwich,
yep,
or burger, whatever you want to call it. And for the sake of adding enough characters to it that makes sense, obviously that people that were in or maybe like known to be involved, where even from like the get-go when the Nazi sailors board their sailboat,
yep,
and they're just kind of laughing, like, oopsie-daisy, like, just...
Shoot him, he hates Germans.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of, like, funny lines that just aren't really, like, you just maybe weren't expecting.
But yeah, yeah.
But I have to... Go ahead, what are you saying?
I was going
to
say, especially with Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson on this, you know, in the same scenes, it was just hilarious.
Yeah, it was honestly good, and I think funny to see Henry Cavill sort of play this type of role.
Yeah,
where he was obviously a badass, but also he just was so nonchalant about a lot of things, and they just sort of would stroll by and just, you know, just like he would just start mowing down Nazis and be like, "Whoops!" Like, and start laughing, and then just be like, "I think one of the best parts about his character is." Everything he saw that he liked, he got.
Yeah. The coat.
It's like, would you like some tea? He's like, I'm going to pour this expensive scotch. How about that?
The lighter.
The lighter. He took like a dozen cigars. Yep. you know? And then
the coat
is like, that's a really nice coat. And then he's like, you know, I really want one of those Nazi hats and coats. And then he just takes one off a dead man.
Yeah, it's an SS.
Yeah, one of the SS coats. And, you know, it was just, I don't know. I don't know if any of that was true. But even if it wasn't,
awesome.
Well, I think the funny thing about his character is he's obviously someone that's not liked, but at the same time, he and the rest of them sort of know what's at stake, and they all have some sort of gripe, aside from the fact that they're in this war against the Nazis.
Yeah.
And like, there's something personal also involved. And, you know, this is before the United States was involved in the war. So it's like
right
got,
before.
Yeah. I mean, but you've got Churchill going like, you know, we don't know if the United States will be involved or you know, at what point could they get involved? But, you know, obviously he has to figure out what they can do. And sure, it's like, I'm going to throw a Hail Mary here. And it's a lose-lose situation, because it's like, if you get caught by the Brits, well, you're...
jail.
Yeah, you're going to a council, a tribunal, and in jail. But if you get caught by the Nazis, well, you're basically going to be tortured to death, and that's that. So, you know, obviously, that is something that's like, well, you know, I guess we can just, you know, Hail Mary it and see what happens. And they proceed on their mission, which is to lessen the usage of the U-boats, the German U-boats, in the Atlantic.
Yeah. Because you end up finding out that this one like cargo ship can basically has enough supplies to supply like thousands, maybe not thousands, but hundreds and hundreds of U-boats. And, you know, the entire western side of Africa is covered with U-boats on the coast. So the British can't get to the shoreline. And then, of course, U-boats are blocking the English Channel, I'm sure, at this point as well. So it's just overall pretty tough with the U-boats everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and then when they actually get to the point where they're in the Canary Islands, and they're, you know, essentially pulling up to Fernando Po, and, you know, you've got Henry Cavill's crew, you've got, you know, Major Phillips' crew that's sailing around him, and then you've got Marjorie Stewart with Mr. Heron, or I believe as they call them, RH, and they're trying to, again, to win over a Gestapo officer. Hugo Stieglitz. Not really Hugo Stieglitz, but...
some other terrible person.
Yeah. He obviously hates Jews, and when they're there, she sees a Jew that was tortured to death, essentially.
Yep.
And it's funny, because she tells a joke about her being a Jew.
Yeah.
And then it's like really tense. And then she starts laughing, and then like he kind of starts to laugh after that. And I was like, I don't know. I kind of think she is.
Yeah. I thought she was too at that point. And then, you know, then she breaks the tense with, you know, this joke like, oh, they're blech, basically. And then they both share a laugh. And then that's when he's like, oh, she's actually like legit. Cool.
Yeah. Until she doesn't really, you know, state the landing when she's at the like the officer party,
the costume party. She kind of fumbles the bag a little bit in the end.
Yeah, she says something that's in Yiddish, not German, and that's a dead giveaway. And then so
instantly,
there's got to be a new party at his base, or yeah, it's like his little home there, and
which is not going to be good.
No, it's but obviously, like, nothing really happens to her, per se. It's just more so, honestly, she was saved because of the attack on the U-boats. You know, so there's like you know, two tugboats and a, you know, a big one that they're trying to take out called the Duchessa. and they're trying to take out the Duchessa. And there's like a plan to essentially, you know, blow it up with some bombs. And it doesn't go quite to plan because...
Well, they find out that it's been armor plated.
Yeah, and yeah,
basically can't blow up.
Yeah, so it's like, wait a second. I think it's RH who hears that it or no.
It's the Francesca at the party. Or, I'm sorry, not Francesca. What's her name?
Marjorie.
Marjorie. Yeah. I don't know why I said Francesca. Marjorie hears it.
From the Italian guy that's helping out.
Yeah, the captain.
Yeah.
And then she goes over and tells him real quick, and he rushes to his, I guess, his little hideout on the edge of the island.
Yeah.
And like warns them with headlights and then gets on radio. And then they come up with a new, more chaotic plan.
Yeah. First it was like, they're going to be leaving like 2 days early. And then it's like, oh, then they arm reinforced it so it can't be sunk. And it's like, oh, well, how convenient. So not only did they have to cut off some time to risk being seen, which they were, and then they obviously had to find a new way. So they're kind of divulging a new plan here. And that's where you've got the geniusness that is displayed from Jeffrey Appleyard, that character. Appleyard is like a genius. He's like,
he's a spy or a former soldier.
He was a spy, but he got caught. He was already there, and he got caught off of bad intel. And they were like, they had to go. They had to go rescue him first, which was
awesome.
Which is every action sequence in this entire film was just amazing.
Oh my god, it was.
You know we saw it in like RPX, which the seats like rumble anytime.
Was crazy, dude.
Yeah, it was honestly. I haven't seen an RPX or something in RPX in a while.
I haven't either.
So I kind of forgot like how legit.
Well, like, I remember at one point Amira and I looked at each other and we're like, "The whole freaking place is moving."
Yeah, no, that was awesome. Honestly,
I loved it.
This is great.
I definitely want to go and see more
movies RPX there.
RPX movies, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Like Deadpool and Wolverine.
Yeah, it could be. Well, at least one of the times.
We have to go to Dolby.
I was honestly going to say Point.
Okay, Point's good. Point's good.
Point then RPX probably.
Okay, I can do that. Point's not hot. RPX isn't hot.
Yeah, did you not sweat?
Nah.
Oh wow, okay.
I was chilling, man. I sat down, the seat was cold. I was like, there we go, man.
That's a first.
There we go.
All right. That's the happy medium, I guess.
Yeah, because Dolby and Altman is 1,000 degrees.
Yeah, yeah, that's. I don't know why. I really don't.
It's a smaller theater.
Yeah, that's probably it.
I think that's it.
It has to be because I don't think the AMC Dolby in Disney Springs gets hot.
We saw Maverick there. Not Maverick. Mission Impossible.
Yes, that was the last one we saw.
Yeah. Okay, that one wasn't too bad.
Yeah,
it's just it's got to be because Altman's so small.
Probably, yeah.
Because they turned some random theater.
But then, but then Point Orlando. I mean, that's a huge theater because it has a huge screen. And maybe it's because there's like a lot of people there because of Dune Part Two.
Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe, no. Well, I don't know. Anywho's
RPX definitely dope. It knocked my popcorn bag down the other night, actually, too. That actually happened when I went to go see Civil War with my dad and brother, too. I'm realizing. But yeah, I did.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I think it knocked something else off. I don't remember what it was. A little table tray there. But yeah, I appreciated the effects in this movie, though.
Yeah.
Didn't seem like there was a lot of CGI used at all. I mean, obviously, like with the ships, maybe, but like.
Yeah, but I mean, for the most part, it looked good. It looked like it was a lot of practical
shit. Yeah, exactly. Like, it looked like practical effects were the foundation for this movie, which, you know, usually that is the better route to go. I mean, obviously, like with the budget only being $60 million, like, you know, not a huge movie. So I wonder, you know, where a majority of the budget went to. You know, I don't know if it was just because of, you know, who was in the movie, or you know, because of like the amount of sort of, you know, big effects that had to happen.
There were a lot of explosions.
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of explosions.
And I know for sure when they rescue the captured guy and they blow that building up, that was a real explosion. That was practical. Because I remember seeing behind-the-scenes stuff like months ago.
Yeah, honestly, I think a lot of the...
I think a lot of it was practical.
Yeah, a lot of the blowing up stuff was definitely practical, which is great. Definitely appreciate it. I think the premise of this story, because it's based on a true story, there's a lot that you can kind of work with. And for it being very quick paced, there is, you know, just a lot that that Guy Ritchie was able to do with, okay, we've got, you know, team one that has this route to go to. They've got team B. You know, they met up beforehand. Now they go on their separate ways, but they're going to meet back up.
Yep.
And sure enough, it does with, you know, a couple, you know, slight, you know, changes that are made along the way. But, you know, once they finally rendezvous, right where the Canary Islands are, and they basically get some backup. They get some help.
The prince.
Yeah, the prince helps them out, and he's like, you know.
He's basically a pirate, I think, right?
Yeah, I guess for the most part, because what was it? Major Phillips knew him
from rugby.
Yeah,
he was a rugby player.
Yeah, and there was a little quote that they had that they sent back. They sent.
They would say, "Wow, does it say it?"
I don't know what the quote was, but he's like, "Oh, that was Unix, so the trophy." And he's like, you know, he kind of poses or something like that.
Yeah, and then he mimicked the pose.
Yeah, so which was honestly pretty awesome. Like there was like this weird connection. Again, like I have no idea if something like that was actually true or not, but it's if not, it's just something
it's,
cool.
It's
that,
cool anyway.
Yeah, that he kind of just came up with as a character. And I think that's something that Guy Ritchie always does well.
Creating like, cool characters.
Yeah. Like just creating these like unique characters, you know, yeah. It's sort of the same thing. Like he did the two Sherlock Holmes movies.
Oh, dude, those, you know, movies are so good.
Yeah. Like, it's very rarely that Guy Ritchie doesn't deliver, you know, and I think we kind of went over, you know, a list of his movies when we covered The Gentlemen. So you can kind of, listen
really
to this. Yeah. So you could listen to that, but you know, it does come down to the wire where they're waiting on an explosion for the, to be able to tug the Duchessa out of the bay.
Yep.
And you know, there's a lot of firing back and forth, and
they first blew the lights in the harbor.
Yep.
Then they blew the radio communications, yes, like the radio tower.
Yep.
And then when they couldn't blow the ship up, they had to blow the anchor up to then be able to tug it out of the harbor. And then as they were tugging the boat out, they blew up like all of the S boats
right
in the harbor. And then there was another big explosion, I think. Or maybe those were the big explosions.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it was one that killed all the lights that no one heard.
Yep.
And then the geniusness of Mr. Heron was like, we're going to use oil lights so that they can't tell. For both parties, because the officers and then the troops were separated at different parties.
There was a beer fest
the beer fest,
and then
yep,
the costume party at the casino.
Yeah, for the officers.
Yeah,
and only the beer fest was locked, like was chained at the door.
Yeah,
and it wasn't until the anchor chain blew that everyone was like, "What was that?" Yeah. You know, so it's like, well, they're trying to steal the boat.
Yep. And then,
which I knew that was going to happen. Like, I'm like, they're totally going to steal it. And Harry Kyle was like, we can steal it. I'm like,
there
boom,
it is.
There it is. There it is.
Yep. Which, I mean, mind you, there is a lot of killing in this movie, a whole lot. And it's a whole lot of brutal killing, too.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Yeah. Especially in that scene where they're walking through the harbor, just shooting everybody as they walk towards the boats.
You know, it's interesting. Yeah. So Alan Rickman plays the character that's named after Anders Fredrik Emil Victor Schauelassen.
Wow.
Yeah. He looks nothing like him, but, he was supposedly crazy with a bow and arrow, you know, and I think
a blade.
Yeah. And a blade, which
you see in the first scene.
Yeah. You see it several times on the ship. And then at one point in the movie, he gets an axe and just starts chopping away.
Dude, holy shit. His character, I think, was my favorite.
You didn't see any of it though, but when he starts using the axe.
You saw a little bit of it. But I mean, yeah, very little. Like a couple swings. Like he had already finished. You just heard it.
Yes. You know, as I'm reading this right now, he was only 24 years old.
Really?
Yes. He was born in 1920 and he died in 1945.
Oh no, how did he die?
Well, I think they even talked about this in the movie after the end, that when they go through like the list of like, you know, who the, you know, real life, you know, people were and everything like that.
Oh yeah.
And cuz he received awards you know, after his death, apparently, but he was in another mission, and
oh, did he get caught and tortured for a year?
That's what they said, but that wasn't what killed him. It was in Italy on the night of April 8th/9th. He was ordered to take out a patrol of one officer and 17 other ranks to raid the north shore of Lake Camaccio, and so he led his men with two scouts and essentially attacked this position with grenades himself and annihilated the first position containing four Germans and two machine guns. And I guess he was like ignoring the hail of bullets sweeping from the road from three enemy positions and an additional one having come into action from 300 yards down the road, he raced forward to engage the position under covering fire from the remainder of the force. Throwing in more grenades, he silenced the position, which was then overrun by his patrol. Two enemy were killed, two captured, and two more machine guns silenced. So he was legit a G.
Damn.
By this time, the force had suffered casualties, and its firepower was very considerably reduced. Still under a heavy cone of fire, Major Lassen rallied and reorganized his force and brought his fire to bear on the third position. Moving forward, he flung into more grenades, which produced a cry of "Kamerad." He then went forward to within 3 or 4 yards of the position to order the enemy outside and to take their surrender. While shouting to them to come out, he was hit by a burst of Spandau fire from the left of the position, and he fell mortally wounded. But even while falling, he flung a grenade, wounding some of the occupants and enabling his patrol to dash in and capture this final position. Major Lassen refused to be evacuated, as he said it would impede the withdrawal and endanger further lives. And as ammunition was nearly exhausted, the force had to withdraw. By the magnificent leadership, let's see.
Damn.
So he essentially went out like a boss.
Sounds like it. Damn.
I mean, this dude, I mean, think about it. He was 24 years old, just being like, nah, we got to keep pressing forward. Screw these Nazis. We got to hold this. This is our order. We're going to do it.
How many 24-year-olds today do you think would do that?
Oh, zero. I think every single 24-year-old would crap their pants.
Let me ask you, would you at 24 do that?
At me at 24?
What was I doing at 24? Being stupid, probably? Yeah.
I mean,
he was a different kind of man. He was built different.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, he was born in 1920.
They don't make him like that anymore.
They really don't. I mean, it's very few and far between at this point in time. But, I mean, like, obviously, having you know, been in the war for some time now, he obviously had a lot of
experience.
Yeah, he obviously was able to create a backbone, I'm sure. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure he was probably like, you know what? Like, because he joined in 1940. So he's in war for a good 5 years. I mean, at that, I'm sure 5 years in the war will definitely change a person to be like, I'm not afraid of anything. I've already faced death numerous times. Yeah. Like, what's one more? We've got to capture this, you know. And it's interesting because, you know, I went back and watched. I'll tie this back around, I promise. I went back and watched Band of Brothers, which is, I think, by far one of the best limited TV series ever created in the history of TV.
Is that Pacific?
Pacific came afterward.
Okay.
So Band of Brothers
is Europe, right?
Band of Brothers is World War II in Germany.
Okay, and like, cool. Yeah. And then the Pacific is something different. Okay, cool. Continue.
Yeah, Pacific's in, you know, the
Pacific.
The Pacific. But then Masters of the Air that recently came out is basically about the airmen from...
British.
Well, no, it's...
is it American?
It's American, but it shows, you know, they show the Brits. It shows the forces from Africa as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, no, it was pretty... I actually have the audio book. I've not finished it yet because it's, like, super long. But covers all that stuff in the show. But I think all three of those series are great, but I think Band of Brothers is definitely the best out of the three.
How many seasons was it?
It's just one. It's limited. It's...
Oh.
It's, like, just here's the story and that's it.
How many episodes?
Masters of the Air was 9. The Pacific was 10, and so was Band of Brothers.
But hey, we're going to give you 8 episodes of Fallout.
I mean, that's Amazon's fault.
We're not going to dive down that rabbit hole.
No.
Anyways, Band of Brothers.
Yeah, but so my point is, in Band of Brothers, you see, you know, that similar stuff when you've got these young guys that are going in these intense missions, right? And to think, as an example, you know, this mission, as we saw with Operation Postmaster, you know, this happened in 1942. So Anders is only 2 years into the war, right? So he's only 21 years old at this point, going on this mission, sailing around Africa on a boat with a couple other dudes to go, hey, we got to go blow up some boats to stop the U-boats.
Not to mention it's a wooden boat that could be exploded with one hit.
Oh, yeah, one torpedo from a German U-boat would have just obliterated it. Destroy it. Yeah, so, you know, again, how many 21-year-olds would have done that? Would have been like, yeah, I'll join this mission.
Zero.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. You know, and I think it's a little... I mean, I don't know how tall this guy was or anything like that, but it's like... I don't know if he was as ginormous as Alan Ritchson is in real life.
I can almost 100% guarantee not, because Alan Ritchson is massive.
Yeah. So, I think for the sake of some things being created differently for the sake of the movie, yeah, that's one of them. That's okay. This is, you know, definitely fiction after all. I mean, kind of the same thing. Like, let's look at Major March Phillips here. The guy that...
That's not Henry Cavill.
Then Henry Cavill was. Yeah, no, exactly. Like, you know, some of these guys are highly altered in the movie based on how they are in real life. And again, that's fine. That's what makes the movie enticing to see. Like, a lot of people are going to think, like, well, you know, this is who's leading this movie. But it's like, well, they weren't all jacked and muscular back in World War II, my guys.
They were pretty skinny, actually.
Yeah. I know, you know, so like, I don't know how there's like this weird misconception by like thinking, oh, this is who is leading the force here, some like pipsqueak guy. Yeah. Because they were all that way.
That's kind of how it was.
Yeah. This new bodybuilding phenomenon didn't really take shape till way after World War II. Didn't know if people knew that or not. So
it's, well, also you got to think, you're not going to be able to eat steak, eggs, beef, chicken. Like,
you can't get your calories and your macros in World Wars, man. Yeah. Especially back then. So, but anyway, definitely, again, great to see how it all comes together. Great to see how it just is, just done by with the plot and whatnot. And I think what was cool at the end where it says that Ian Fleming, who was a part of Gibbons' inner circle during this time, would use Operation Postmaster as the inspirational basis for his James Bond novels. Mike,
which we actually saw someone who was cast as Ian Fleming too, which was awesome.
Yeah, that was Freddie Fox.
Freddie Fox,
which was great. I mean, cool, again, you got other great people that was in your Rory Kinnear, who played Winston Churchill. He was he's actually been in three Bond films. He was in Spectre. What was it? He was in Spectre, No Time to Die, and I think what was the other one in the middle?
Skyfall.
Yeah, let me see if he's in Skyfall.
Dude, Skyfall was my favorite one. Skyfall is my favorite James Bond movie ever.
Okay, so he was in Quantum of Solace. He was in Skyfall.
Third one.
He's in Spectre. Okay, so he was in all four of them except for Casino Royale.
There's five.
I'm saying except for Casino Royale.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, including Spectre.
Yeah.
And No Time to Die.
Yep.
Now I get it.
Yep. So that's cool. As I didn't know who it was until I was like, who's playing Winston Churchill? Let me ask,
how do you think that guy did a good job playing Winston Churchill?
I mean, for the short time that he was in it, I think so.
Me too. There were times where I couldn't understand him, and I'm like, that's Winston Churchill.
Yeah, and I'm like that's that's pretty spot on. I mean, but
it does make you, well, at least it made me kind of think about, learning a little bit more about that side of history in regards to what Churchill was dealing with.
Yeah.
Because this way, or in certain parts of this movie, it made it seem like there was a slight, not a mutiny or anything, but like, it's like, listen, surrender to the Nazis. And he's like, no, why would I? It's the easiest way.
Yeah.
What? And he's like, all right, get out.
Yeah. He faced a lot of scrutiny on his decisions, and obviously he knew that if he was going to get caught, it's like, hey, listen, if you get caught, they're going to basically, get you out of being the prime minister, and it's like, well, if it comes to it, it comes to it. It is what it is. I'm trying to win a war here, and stop. And cause I forget how he says it, but
Hitler's not playing by the rules, and neither are we.
Yeah.
And neither are we.
Hitler's not playing by the rules, and neither are we.
That's literally exactly what it sounds like, too, pretty much.
It does, too.
Rocks in his mouth.
Yeah. He was chewing with rocks. except he has like a cigar as well.
It's just a giant fat cigar.
Hitler is not playing by the rules. And neither are we. Something like that. I was trying to chew on my tongue without biting through it.
It did get a little piratey towards the end.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it was there, honestly. Zero rehearsal.
Yeah, zero. That was just completely on the spot. I didn't even listen to it until last night or the other night. But the one thing I was going to say at the beginning, I totally forgot, but mentioned it earlier, a $60 million budget, and for some reason only has made $9 million here in the States.
That to me is mind blowing because this movie was kick-ass.
I don't understand how it hasn't made more money. I mean, I don't know if just people are unaware of the type of movie that it is, or if they're just, unaware of what it's about. You know, they just don't know who Guy Ritchie is, which is
at this point, that's crazy.
Yeah. How do you not know who he is by now? But, you know, and especially with Henry Cavill as your lead guy, you know, again,
Superman.
Yeah. You've got a ton of, you know, recognizable faces in here. And, you know, again, I don't know. I'm just really baffled by it. And maybe it'll start to pick up over time. Maybe it'll do better internationally, which I think will be interesting.
I was
going
to say, those numbers come out tomorrow, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. So
that'll be interesting to look at.
Yeah. So at the time of recording, this is before any international box office sales have come out. But I'll be curious. And because, again, as soon as the movie was done, I was like, oh my God, that is now my favorite Guy Ritchie movie.
You said the same thing.
You know, and I like, you know, I think I hold about a handful of his movies pretty dear to like ones that I'll watch anytime. So definitely surprising. What would you rate it?
I know we talked about it briefly the other night when we saw it.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to go with a 96, 95. You know, this movie was just awesome. You know, from the very first scene, the very first music track, too. Yeah. You know, the soundtrack was very Western.
Yeah.
To me, which is, you know, I loved it. The action was, you know, kick-ass. The humor was all spot on. The casting was great. The acting was great. I mean, Guy Ritchie kind of nailed it. Definitely my favorite Guy Ritchie movie now. And I know we all said it when we saw it, but definitely going to go see it again.
Yeah, I think it's worth seeing it twice.
It definitely is. And, you know, I really hope that more people actually go and see it, because this seems like the kind of movie that you need to go see in a theater with friends.
Yes.
Because that was just fucking awesome. So yeah, I mean, I give it a 95, 96, I'd say. What about you?
Well, yeah, I'm sticking with as soon as it was done, I said 95. Yeah. I literally just said 95. That's my initial, like, not overthinking it, which my gut go-to number. I said 95.
Just, it was a good movie, man. It was kick ass.
Yeah. I really have no complaints about it. You know, it like everything that we would look at, between the music, the cinematography, the shots, the action, the effects, the dialogue, the characters, you know, and I can't even really be very nitpicky about it, because it's like, oh, well, maybe some characters could have had a little bit more screen time. But it's like, yeah, but how much are you going to show of like Henry Cavill on a boat?
Yeah.
All they're doing and all they can do is sail for like 16 days.
The plot's simple. Go blow up this boat.
It's not an overly sophisticated plot. It'd be hard to screw it up either. You kind of see what happens. And again, we said this, you know, a little while ago, there's an ending that we know of because of the files. So Guy Ritchie knows how to end it. Okay. So they successfully stole the boat. Great. And then handed it over to the British Navy. Okay, cool. So how did they do that? Well, let me try and come up with a pretty clever outcome and, you know, basis of story points and plots. What's going to make with, you know, an interesting character arcs, you know, with Marjorie, you know, we see who she is. She gets involved. She has a duty. She seemingly do it well. She, you know, stumps the Gestapo officer, but then fumbles and is captured. You know, RH is a, you know, pretty, what would you call it? A shifty spy that owns the casino, but is involved, and then, you know, knows some people. And then, like, when he got caught, when he was trying to put the bomb in the, like, the power generator part, and, you know, those three officers, and I was like, oh, does this guy even know how to fight?
Yeah.
You know, or have a weapon? He has a little, like, weapon inside his sleeve, and, you know, it kills two of them real quick, and he's trying to load the weapon, and it doesn't work. And he's like, all right, got a knife you in the neck, my guy. And I was like, oh, yo, Mr. Heron, all right, guy, you...
All without ruining his suit.
Yeah. So, and obviously he saves Marjorie at the end as she's about to die in the backseat of the car, and he kills
she killed him. She pulls the gun. That's right.
He killed the.
He killed the. What's his name? SS. Stieglitz.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, she shot him right in the head.
Right in the head.
It was great. But yeah, and then obviously the other guys involved all sort of saved the day. They had they had their duties. They had their jobs. They carried it out. You know, defending the boats, defending the tugging.
It was honestly, for having to audible like that, they kind of nailed it.
Yeah.
You know, they made it work without any casualties, may I add you.
Yep.
So that's a pretty successful team.
Yeah. It, I guess based on true to life comparisons on Operation Postmaster.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the strength, so the what they were up against, the Duchessa had a ship's crew of 46, but the other two ships were unknown. But then the Brits obviously had under Major March Phillips had a small raiding force of 11 men, and then the special ops was 4 men and local volunteers of 17 men. So a little bit more than the movie showed, but the casualties and losses were none for the Brits. They didn't lose a single person. And then
efficiency.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, you know, the Nazis lost quite a few crew members with obviously a merchant ship and two boats captured. So it's like, and when you go in and you don't lose a single person, yeah, like you said, that is very efficient and a job very well done, only to the point where they do get captured. And obviously the ending I thought was great when they show, it was like a 4-week
time jump.
Yeah. Yep. And they're in jail and they're kind of just all lining up. And I'm like, damn, everyone got locked up. Okay.
All of them.
And then all of a sudden there's like these, you see, I knew it was Churchill coming in.
Very commanding.
Like, and you know what was really interesting? And again, I love this sort of performance because he's just talking and he didn't even bother to look at them.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I forgot what he said, but he's just giving this little speech about.
Oh, yeah. He's like, he's like, oh, well, you know, so basically this is what happened, talking about them.
Yeah, it's
like this unsanctioned mission.
Could you believe this? You know,
yeah,
people doing this, you know, disobeying a direct order from an admiral, like, you know, all this.
Yeah. And basically stating what they all did. And then it's like, U.S. Ships are now able to make it across. And then people start, well, not people, I guess it's servants or maids, but they start bringing in food and they uncuff them all. And he's basically like, all right, enjoy this food. You all work directly for me now. And then he leaves.
Yeah, it's pretty funny how, as he's talking, he's like, food plates, like these silver dishes are being bought in. And it's like, oh, wait a second. Well, they probably haven't had a good meal in a month. So,
yep.
Yeah, you know, here's your actual reward. And, you know, he says, because of what they were able to do, the Atlantic was safe.
Yep.
And obviously that's what allowed historic invasions from the U.S.
events to happen.
Yeah. What does he say? He says, President Roosevelt, right?
Yep.
Is a very happy man, something along those lines, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, and it's like, hey, guess what? Because of Pearl Harbor, they got to get involved now.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to, you know, it's like, but honestly, like, I didn't even know that there was a thing like this mission.
I didn't either.
I had no idea.
It makes you wonder how much happened.
That we didn't know about?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But I think even for this take, like what would have happened if they never completed it?
Hundreds of U-boats would have gotten stocked and prepared, then they could have built another couple hundred, I'm sure.
It's like the U.S. would have been kept at bay, maybe.
I think so.
And then at that point, all of Europe falls to, you know, to the Nazis. Parts of Africa, you know, still are under control. So at that point, it's like, essentially the United States would have been, cornered.
Yeah.
Indefinitely. There was a show that came out some odd years ago.
Man in the High Castle.
Man in the High Castle.
It's about a book, I think, right?
Yes. But it's essentially what life would have been like had the Axis
powers won.
Yeah. So like all of California is essentially
Japanese. Yeah, now. There's a West Coast and then there's an East Coast where the Nazis have, and then there's like this middle ground.
Yeah, like Colorado's like this like neutral territory,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. The show in the book was
Prime,
weird.
I think.
What's that?
I think it's on Prime.
Yeah, on Amazon Prime, yeah. Yeah, there's some interesting parts about it, like this weird like time travel things that they were like trying to figure out, but I mean,
interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, it's crazy cuz I don't know how else they would have done it. And, you know, they might have had to have found some other means to do it, but like at that point you could have said, well, at least the United States, like honestly, I think at that point it would have been like, all right, well, we're going to start dropping nukes on Germany now.
Oof.
And at that point, like we had already dropped two in Japan and in the United States did. I feel like then I'm like, oh, okay. So we beat you to the punch. You're going to come and invade. Well, guess what? We're going to start showing you little force at that point. And then be like, okay, how about you retire? But again, like imagine it came to that and the United States is dropping 5, 6, 7, 8 bombs all over Europe because of Hitler. It's like, surrender or we're going to keep dropping bombs.
It's crazy. Couldn't do it.
Like that's what I'm saying. Like things like this Operation Postmaster could have been so pivotal for the entire events of not just the war, but life,
yeah,
after, you know, after World War II. Man, it's crazy to think about. It really is. And you think what, you know, I think that's one of the things that is maybe, I think, a little underappreciated because people don't watch movies like this, or they don't watch shows, they don't read history books,
yeah,
that tell about these stories, because it's like what we've got here in America is so easily taken for granted.
100%.
And, you know, I think, again, there is a bit of privilege in that, and it's a blessing, you know, more so than a privilege, I think. But like a lot of people had to go through intense moments, face death. A lot of people died, obviously. Right. So it's like, you know, but these operations just had to be done. You know,
they were pivotal.
Pivotal?
Yes.
Yes.
even if, you know, the public didn't really know about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, dude, the fact that this was just uncovered in 2016 is just mind blowing.
Yeah, that's the crazy part.
This has been a secret since
8 years ago.
Since 1942, bro. Like, crazy.
Imagine what else.
Yeah, I really do wonder what else. I mean, that's why people are like, oh, they're not hiding stuff from us. If you only knew, folks. If you only knew.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah. It's probably a good place to stop before this gets too out of control. But yeah, go see the movie. Also, go follow us on X. You can find us at Plot Strikes Back.
No, the.
Not enough characters, Elon. Help us out, please. We need 3 more.
Exactly. Yeah, let us know what you thought. If you go and see it, which I think you should, highly recommend it.
Yes, highly. And if you have a Regal with RBX,
go see it.
Go see it in that. Regal.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
Pretty cool.
Definitely. And we'll have some more stuff coming out soon. I thought about this actually all since Furiosa is coming out. Got to do Mad Max.
The best action movie ever made. God.
So we'll have to do that one. So you'll see that one coming out in the future.
We got, well, sure. We also got to get Deadpool 2 done at some point.
Yeah, Deadpool 2 will be in the future. I mean, we've got a couple of good things coming up. Like, obviously, yeah. May the 4th. We've got to cover Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's the 25th anniversary of Phantom Menace.
I haven't seen the full Phantom Menace in a while, so that'd be good.
Yeah, I want to go see it in theaters.
Oh, yeah, it's coming out.
Yeah.
That'd be cool to see, actually. I've never seen that one on the big screen.
I haven't seen it in the theaters since it came out. Originally 1999.
That'll actually be pretty sick to go see.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, I saw this 25 years ago in the theater when I was like 13 years old. All right, yeah. We're
definitely going to have to do that one then.
Yeah, for sure. So
stay tuned.
Stay tuned, folks.
And give us some, you know, movies or TV shows you want us to review if you have any.
Yes, indeed. So appreciate all the support.
Yes.
Keep sharing around with everyone. And we'll catch you next time on The Plot Strike.